Dear listener, welcome back to the show. It talks about stuff on purpose. It's Trappo. I'm Dustin.
I'm Kai.
We're back for another edition of, what was it, Trappo's New Music Showcase, or New Music Extravaganza? What the? It's been so long, I can't remember what the fuck we called it.
Oh, no.
New Music Showcase! You know, I will just say that, and then if that's not what we call it, that's what we call it now. I'll just redub it every fucking episode we did before. The latest in a series, a new series that we're trying out. We're trying to expose you, dear listener, to new and interesting music from new and interesting people. This is an experiment. I think it might already be a failure, but I'm not sure yet. Either way. Kai, why don't you hear about whatever the fuck we got lined up today?
All right. A March 2023 release by eclectic artist Lonnie Holly called Oh Me, Oh My.
I suggest you all go as deep as you can, because the deeper we go, the more chances there are for us to understand your me's, and understand your my's.
Lonnie Holly is a very interesting character. I first heard some of his music on an album called National Freedom, and there's a song called Like Hell Broke Free, like Hell Broke Away. I was like, what the fuck is going on with this guy? I gotta find out more about him. Then I did. Lonnie Holly was actually born in 1950 in Birmingham, Alabama, still Jim Crow era in the South. Had a pretty crazy rough life. He was born the seventh of 27 children. He claims that when he was 4 years old, he was traded for a bottle of whiskey. He was in foster homes at age five, working at various jobs, were basically child slave labor. You lived and worked at the movie theater or a whiskey house, and he lived there and worked there. It's like a 5 or 6 year old. And lived in a lot of foster homes and had a pretty rough life. Mostly known, actually, as a physical artist, making all sorts of strange folk art. Music was like his fifth career, just something that he happened upon much later in life. He's, I think, 73 years old at the time of this recording.
We got to get to the depressing part about how he realized he was an artist, how he found his calling.
Divine intervention led him to a discovery he found behind a fucking metal casting place. There's this soft sandstone stuff is created. It's like a byproduct of metal casting. They just throw it in piles and it makes this kind of sandstone and you can easily carve it. One of his sister's two children died in a house fire, and they had nothing, no money, and so he had to carve them headstones out of this sandstone-like casting material that he found behind a fucking foundry. That was his first, that was his, the beginning of his art life.
That's how he became the Sandman.
That's how he became known as the Sandman. Probably forced at some point as a teenager to pick cotton and had a job digging graves. Another thing, it's kind of his word or no word. Supposedly he got hit by a car and was pronounced brain dead in the hospital and then regained his faculties. But at the time, especially for a young black man in the South, he got hit by a car. That guy fucking pushed him into the ditch and drove away.
It's like, I ain't getting in trouble for this shit.
And drove off. That's probably what fucking happened. You know, he became a father at the age of 15. He has at least 15 children himself, had a million other jobs. He worked at Disney.
Yeah, didn't they say he was a short order cook at Disney World?
Yeah, he was like he worked at one of the little restaurants in fucking Disney World somewhere. So he's been around, done all sorts of stuff. It wasn't by even his doing that he became a famous folk artist. It was just because people found his shit and were like, oh my God, this is weird. And then it ended up getting into a couple smaller museums in the South. And before long, his shit was at like the Smithsonian and the American Folk Art Museum in New York. Has since been displayed even by the mid-80s at the White House, and his paintings and like making giant sculptures out of found objects. Supposedly he had this giant house that was just completely full of bonkers folk art. There's a place out in the country in Kansas that's similar to that, or at least used to be there. I don't know if it's there anymore.
I can't tell you the name of the artist. I used to know it, but after he died, yeah. I believe his work was placed in a trust and it's being preserved.
Okay.
A lot of the roadside stuff, I believe, is actually still being preserved there, so you can still drive by and see it. Keep talking. I'm actually going to try to look this up real quick.
Okay. This dude has led a fucking weird, interesting interesting, crazy life before he ever started making music. He started making music in like 2006.
M.T. Liggett, that was
M.T. Liggett, yeah.
Mullenville, Kansas.
Is that the 40?
U.S. 400.
400.
His work is being preserved.
Yeah. Oh, that's cool. But yeah, Lonnie Hawley started making music basically because someone told him he should just scream into this thing while they pound on the keyboard. And he was like, hey, that's cool. That basically gave him a new way to make art. Per his own website, Hawley did not start making and performing music in a studio, nor does his creative process mirror that of the typical musician. Yeah, no shit. His music and lyrics are improvised on the spot and morph and evolve with every event, concert, and recording. In Hawley's original art environment, he would construct and deconstruct his visual works, repurposing their elements for new pieces. This often led to the transfer of individual narratives into the new work, creating a cumulative composite image that has depth and purpose behind its original singular meaning. The layers of sound in Hawley's music, likewise, are the result of decades of evolving experimentation. So that's what he thinks of his own music. On Oh Me Oh My, there are some songs that sound like a normal song. There's like instruments and lyrics. Mount Meigs is just him telling a story with some weird noise banging behind you.
Damn the curiosity. Only going one way down the road.
And some of them, you know, like Oh Me Oh My, some of the other ones have a more traditional song structure. But because of that, this album will not be for everyone. Some people will get 5 seconds into this and be like,
nope, not doing that.
I kind of had some hesitation also at the beginning. And then when I began to look at it more as a piece of folk art, I was like, oh, okay. It made a little more sense if you look at it through that lens and understand it's not necessarily a musical album in the way that you would normally sit down and listen to a musical album. It is a bizarre piece of art. It tells some stories. It's got some funny, goofy, silly shit. It's got some serious bringing you down shit. You know, he does talk about fucking basically child slave labor.
Picking cotton, toting those veils, bending our backs, pouring up and down the ditches and the creeks.
There's some serious shit on here, but then there's some other stuff that'll make you fucking laugh. Definitely some stuff that'll make you think. And there's definitely some stuff that you'll be like, what the fuck is this?
The big thing about his music, and I think really his life story, is that, I mean, yes, there's heartache, there's pain, but really his story is all about perseverance, living with the pain and not letting it define you. There's a lot of sadness in the music that you'll hear in Oh Me Oh My, but really the message he's trying to leave you with as a listener is that there's wonder in the world and there's beauty and you can persevere. Like, you know what? That's a pretty good message.
Earth will be there. Earth will be there to catch us when we fall.
This guy has seen a lot of shit in his life, and he's had some bad hands dealt him in his life. But after all this time, he's still not letting it destroy him. He won't let it defeat him. He still looks for the beauty in the world, and he finds it wherever he goes. And that's pretty fucking awesome.
All that hardship, and this is still has a positive outlook. It makes you think about these things. It doesn't necessarily bring you down. Maybe I said that wrong. I mean, it's not a happy fucking pop album. Heavy would be a better way to put it.
But he also uplifts you with the music as well. It's a journey. Yeah. It's a journey.
Kindness will follow your tears. Exactly what you were just talking about. Kindness will follow your tears, but there's tears.
It feels like a warm sunrise to me. That's so
greatness would come in the morning and kindness will follow you, tears, and dry them up down through the years.
It's like a lullaby, the mother telling her child that kindness will follow your tears.
It's more about perseverance and hope. He lived through all that shit, and that was 50 years ago. And he's still here. So fuck those people.
And that song, None of Us Have But a Little While, he actually shares his own definition of the word gone.
The definition of gone is when we look around for our friends and they are not here any longer with us.
He doesn't say they're no longer with us, because this is just the way he talks. His phrasing is specific. They're not here any longer with us. That phrase fucked me up when he said that, because it feels real. That's real.
And it could also, it could mean maybe they're dead, but maybe they live somewhere else and you just don't see them or talk to them anymore.
They're gone. They're not around anymore. There's so much longing in lyrics like that. The way he can take something, concepts that can sound so big, you may not be able to feel like you can define them. They feel too big. But then he just throws out a line like that, and it feels effortless on his part. And it also feels like a universal truth has just been communicated to you. I'm like, fuck. Divine intervention. They might be onto something there.
For a 73-year-old who doesn't know how to make music and doesn't give a fuck, he does something similar, you know, in Mount Meigs, where he tells you about all this horrible shit that happened at the
Alabama Industrial School for Negro Children,
which was basically slave camp for children, literally begging you to imagine him there as a young boy.
We didn't get no scholarship. We didn't get no graduate degree. But all of that information is still within me. Picture me being there. Picture me being there. In Alabama Industrial School for Negro Children.
Kind of magic of empathy right there. If you're listening to the song and you just let it happen to you, what he went through and what so many other poor children went through, you can feel it. The raw emotion in his voice, that's decades of this weight that's been sitting on his shoulders. And the fact that he claims even now, as a 73-year-old man, he still has night terrors. The experience of living through that horror, it still affects him profoundly. But I love the idea that he has a lot of collaborators on this album. Well-known collaborators.
Sharon Van Etten. More Mother.
Twirling, tumbling through space, I'm falling. I'm coming.
Bon Iver. Can't you find your kindness? Michael Stipe comes out, literally just mumbles. Oh.
Which is one of the more fascinating aspects of the record, is that the only ones who actually come out, and I wouldn't say they take over the songs they're in, but they definitely have more presence, are More Mother and Rokia Kone. They're not just background players. In fact, More Mother, she's doing this poetic performance where she's talking about her grandmother's hands, and it's very profound.
I think about the strength of my grandmother's hands, holding it all, the weight of it all. I'm coming. How soft is the landing I'm coming? Is it soft like cotton? Is it soft like new plantations? How soft is the landing I'm coming? I am thinking about my grandmother's hands. Deep, deep, deep in Alabama dirt.
Michael Stipe doesn't take anything over. He's just there. They all serve a purpose in this music.
It seems like a collaboration, whereas the other ones are like guest spots.
That also leads me to this wonderful quote. It's from the Pitchfork review of Oh Me Oh My. The quote says, Oh Me Oh My can be described as both star-studded and virtually bereft of mainstream appeal.
Exactly. Michael Stipe doesn't show up for nothing.
But this is a perfect example of outsider art. That's what Lonnie Holly is. He's an outsider artist, completely self-taught. And in some cases, you would say not taught at all. He just does.
Considering the history we talked about, and now at 73, he can make weird-ass, interesting music that has no mainstream music appeal because it's not a fucking mainstream album. It's a piece of art.
Hush, Lonnie Brother Holly. Hush, little Tunky McElroy. Don't you cry. Hush that little child. There's more to reality, and I'm gonna tell you why. I can't hush. I can't hush. I'm the little baby that was born that cannot hush.
There was one other quote from Holly that I like. My art and my music are always closely tied to what is happening around me. And the last few years have given me a lot to thoughtsmith about.
Thoughtsmith, yes.
Thoughtsmith about this fucking man. I don't know. He didn't go to college or anything. He's fucking hilarious. I love it. His wording is just beautiful and weird, always.
The brilliance of this music is that he teamed up a producer named Jack Knife Lee, who's done a lot of big music. What Jack
Modest
Knife,
Mouse,
The Cure, stuff. Fucking The Cure. U2. The thing about Jack Knife Lee, I have a feeling he's the one who brought in the collaborators because he's the one who probably had their numbers.
Yeah.
I heard him describe the process of making the music with Jack Knife Lee is that Holly do whatever the hell he wanted. The music kind of came together organically around the stories he was weaving with his words, because that's the only way he's ever going to work and create something profound. Lonnie Holly is not a musician. He doesn't know how to make music. He trusts Jack Knife Lee to craft the music around his stories. It works beautifully.
Mm-hmm.
This music is it's gorgeous and unhinged and beautiful. Have I not made that clear, dear listener?
It's just like a walk through Lonnie Holly's mind. You never know what the fuck's gonna happen. Like he says on the title track, the deeper we go, the more chances there are for us to understand the oh me's and the oh my's.
Well, yeah, the great conclusion of that.
As we grow, we learn each other more and more and more. Learn how precious life is. No me and no my turns into the old us.
Wonderfully simple and profound conclusion to draw. A work of art, a work of outsider art, filtered through the sensibility of a mainstream music producer. The end result is something that is about as far from mainstream as you could get. It's beautiful. I love this. I'm glad you brought it to my attention. I didn't even know this existed until you said, listen to this bullshit. I was like, okay, I'll listen to this bullshit. It's like, man, this is fucking profound. I love it.
Is Lonnie Holly's Me Oh My in the Trapo Essentials canon? No,
we have to abide by the rules of the New Music Showcase.
Oh, yeah.
We do not have the final decision here. The decision rests not in our hands, Kai, but in your hands, dear listener. The New Music Showcase is decided by a poll that you get to vote on, dear listener. All I have to do is go to the official Trapo blog, traposhow.blogspot.com. Look for New Music Showcase, Oh Me Oh My by Lonnie Holly. There will be a poll there. There will be a link there for you to be able to listen to the music if you haven't heard it already. And there will be a poll. So vote on the poll. Vote yes, because don't vote no. Don't be an asshole. Don't be that guy.
I mean, if you don't like it, that's fine. Just don't vote.
I want this to be a unanimous. I want it to be a clean sweep of 3 votes in favor and zero votes against.
Zero nays.
We want you to vote. I guess we're encouraging listener
interaction.
Feedback. That's the one. Go to the blog and vote. We're done talking about this. Leave comments, by the way. That's what we want you to do. Leave comments on the blog. Tell us what you think about Oh Me Oh My by Lonnie Holly. Tell us what you think about Buddy Holly.
Peggy Sue. Peggy Sue. Oh, how my heart yearns for you, oh, Peggy, my Peggy Sue.
You know?
But hey, yeah. You know what else? You could send us an email, even though you probably won't.
Oh, they
won't. But you could if you wanted to. Traposhow@gmail.com. If you're feeling a little verbose and would like to lay us a 30-paragraph essay about whatever weird shit's going on in your life.
No one's going to send us emails about anything anymore. That's done. It's over, guys.
It's over, but I'm going to check it every day for the rest of my life.
Hopefully Max Power isn't dead, but if you're dead, Max Power, we're going to do a seance. That's all we've got for this New Music Showcase, dear listener, here at Trapo, the show that talks about stuff on purpose. And, well, I don't know. We're signing off. We're done. So I guess just get the fuck off the internet. Like Highlander. I don't need more Highlander. We're good. How many times did we try after the first movie to make Highlander work? And we realized it doesn't work.
They make 3 or 4 movies?
They made 4 sequels. The Quickening, Final Dimension, Endgame, and The Source. None of them were good. 5 seasons of a television show with 3 good episodes. A spinoff with no good episodes. And now they're still trying to reboot it.
Some things can die. And just exist where they existed in the past.
Yeah.
That's okay.
That's it. 1986, Highlander, one and done. Not everything has to be a franchise.